It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside La Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Now here's your host, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of this here Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
Is there another?
There is not.
There's not another. Therefore, you are the host of
the Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
Sure. Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
Is there another Ohio State University?
No, there's not. Okay. Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister's Smokehouse? Okay, sorry.
Formerly known as Dowling.
Formerly known as Dowling Smokehouse. I saw it, and I was about to say it, and then realized, wait, we changed it. Brister's Smokehouse, formerly known as Dowling Smokehouse.
Nothing has changed.
Right.
Just the name.
Just the name has changed. Give us a call at the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners Hotline, 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Of course, you can tweet us your questions with the hashtag BTB Radio, and we will answer your questions on the air.
Louisiana Tech victorious in homecoming, 59-10. Manny Diaz's defense stifles the number 5 offense in the country, who had been averaging over 40 points a game, to 10.
Yeah, they're actually averaging
shut them out in the
nearly
second
45
half
a game, and limits them to 10 points, 0 in the second half, and then only a little over 140 yards through the air. They were averaging 410 through the air coming in, number 2 passing offense in the country.
Forced picked off Dowdy 4 times. He had been picked off 4 times previously all season, so he doubled his interception number in 1 outing in Ruston. After the game, I asked Coach Holtz what it's been like to watch the story unfold from Manny Diaz, of course, last year as the fall guy at Texas, and here is his response. Maybe not.
He comes out
there. It is
with his defense today with a number. Coach, it's a good story when you think about what Diaz went through last year, and to look at him, he comes out with his defense today with a number 5 ranked offense and just shuts them down. What's it feel like coaching alongside and watching that story unfold?
You know, and Coach Diaz and I talked a lot about this in the hiring process, and Manny Diaz is a great football coach. Manny Diaz was a great football coach a year ago. Manny Diaz was a great football coach 3 years ago. He's got a great mind. I've said this before. He's got a great mind. I think he's a rock star. I think he sees the big picture. He gets it. He understands offense and defense. Like, a lot of people go into this game and go, okay, well, we got to play. We got to slow our offense down to make sure we keep their offense off the field. But when Coach Diaz and I talked about it, I was like, you know what, our best approach is to say offensively, let's go fast and see how many we can score, and let's not make it a low scoring game. Let's try and make it a high scoring game on offense. And I just think that he has done a great job with this team. I think he's come in, he's gotten these guys to really buy in, because anytime you come in as a new coach, the first thing you got to do is sell yourself to your players. Your players got to buy in, because with all these great schemes and your players not being able to relate to your buy-in, and then I think he makes it simple enough that guys can understand. I am proud for him. I am happy for him. He deserves it. He has earned it. And he deserves all the recognition and what he's done with this defensive football team, because right now they are playing with some teeth. I mean, they are playing with a stinger. They're playing with some teeth. I just am really proud, and I'm really happy for him, because he deserves this with some of the public humiliation that he went through in the past, where he was the fall guy. And there's a lot of times in this game that things happen that you have no control over, and I think he was the one that everybody kind of pointed a finger to. But I think he's an excellent football coach, and I'm certainly glad he's a Bulldog and he's part of this staff here at Louisiana Tech.
I did not expect that response.
No, certainly not.
It's completely 100% truthful.
Right. When Holtz responded, there was no coach speak. It was genuine. It was what he really felt about Manny Diaz. And honestly, it felt almost like he was speaking a little bit about him, of his personal opinion of him as well, not just as a football coach. I thought the sentiment behind his comments was fantastic.
You know, my follow-up nearly was for Coach Holtz to respond to that question himself. From his past at South Florida, I don't necessarily know that he was the fall guy or if the AD had so much outside pressure from a fan base that maybe had too much control. But he has redeemed himself as well.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. No doubt about it at all. And it really, it only took him basically one year to do it. I mean, honestly, this season, surrounding himself with the coaches that he wanted to have, surrounding himself with some of the players that he wanted to bring in, I mean, he's shown exactly what his system can do in Conference USA. It's showed what his system could do in one of these mid-major level type schools. And I think he's absolutely redeemed himself.
It really frustrated us, you and I, last season whenever he was receiving so much pressure from Tech fans. And it's been awesome to watch, not just to say that we were right, don't get me wrong. It is nice to say that, but to also be able to watch the guy respond to any criticism. It's not fun for anybody to receive that kind of criticism at work. And that's ultimately, that is work for him.
Well, and most people don't perform their jobs in a fishbowl, basically, with everyone watching. So, of course, there's always that heightened level of pressure on you to perform and ultimately to succeed. And, you know, when you get paid the big bucks or whatever, you're supposed to perform at a higher level than maybe, honestly, is available, is an option.
Yesterday during lunch, I was listening to SVP and Rosillo, probably my favorite talk show on ESPN Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7. And Ryan Rosillo had left Scott Van Pelt's house and stopped at a sports bar to have a bite and watch a football game. And he sat down and some of the patrons began to talk about, oh, you got to make that tackle. And he said, I looked at the guy and I said, you've never even made a tackle. And that's the way I feel now when I go and sit in the stands or go watch a game in public. Is when you're in this job, I think John would agree with this, and I know you'll agree with this, you see things much more from a 15,000 feet and not necessarily so critically just on one person. You see the big picture instead of the small picture.
Sure, well, there's no doubt about it because you see what goes on behind the scenes maybe. You see those things that are in the works. You see those things that are ultimately either – hindering progress that the fan may or may not see. So yeah, there's certainly you get a different view on it because you're at a different level than maybe the fan is. And what the fan sees is the product on the field and the W or the L.
And I feel like that's what our job is to bring the big picture, to be realistic.
Oh, no doubt about it.
And bring that to the fan.
No doubt about it. And that's something that, and a shameless plug, but that's something that BleakTechBlue.com does because it's really the only inside look that you really have at the program. And because of that, those who subscribe to BleakTechBlue.com and can see some of that stuff, ultimately they have a different outlook on not only the football program, but the athletic program as a whole at Louisiana Tech.
Well, I appreciate that shameless plug.
Well, it's the truth, honestly. I wouldn't just say it for saying its sake.
A couple of questions. We'll move on from that topic. But I felt like we had to lead this show with the redemption story about Holtz and, of course, Manny Diaz. Whether Manny Diaz is here next year or not, I don't think Skip Holtz would regret a thing about hiring him for a single season. What he's been able to do in a single season is nothing short of remarkable. We got a question on Twitter with the hashtag BTB Radio from Kelly. Who knew that we had this defense? Manny is a huge factor. This team is more fun to watch than the 2012 team. He also follows up with, hey, Jared W. King.
Right.
What's the plan to stop your quote-unquote BF, also known as boyfriend, this weekend? Because it seems like we can stop anyone.
We'll get to more of the UAB game later on, and actually do have a couple of ideas. I did watch some highlights of Jordan Howard this week, and I have a couple of ideas on how Diaz will choose to stop him. Now, obviously, I'm no X's and O's guy, but we'll get to that.
Just real quick, I closed by Sportsline, the sports company, this evening with this. It's going to be a rinse and repeat of maybe the ULL game and UNT game.
Oh, there's no question about it. And those games really don't stray that far from what Diaz has done most of the season. The only time that we've ever really seen any major scheme changes, and really not major changes, is with the Western Kentucky game when he chose to put the corners out in man coverage, I would say close to 85% of the time.
And what that does going forward is now that he has faith in those two guys, Adarius Barnes and LeVander Liggins, who came away with two interceptions apiece.
Correct.
Two for Adarius in the first half, two for LeVander in the second half.
Right.
Now you can blitz more.
Oh, well, there's no question about it. And
you get even more creative blitz-wise.
And as if he wasn't blitzing enough, or bringing the illusion of the blitz, which I've been saying that for weeks now. I said that at the postgame, on the postgame call-in show, and sure enough, this week at the press conference, Manny Diaz says that honestly, he watched the tape and he saw that Hilltoppers quarterback Brandon Doughty was scared of the blitz. And he saw it on tape, and so he continued to bring the illusion of the blitz to get him scared in the pocket.
I would say that a couple of those hits early on are what really set the tone in that game.
And then in this right there, when the Hilltoppers ended up settling for the field goal, they had third and goal. Kentrell Bryce comes completely unblocked, untouched, off of a corner blitz and smoked Brandon Doughty, and they ended up settling for a field goal. After that, Doughty was absolutely never the same.
Let's take this break. Other side of the break, a little bit more UAB talk, WKU talk, Western Kentucky, and then at 6:30. We'll have an expert with UAB joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Jared, a couple of sponsors, and we'll talk a little Western Kentucky.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse, formerly known as Dowling Smokehouse. Give us a call on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline, 888-993-7762, 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can tweet us with the hashtag BTB Radio on Twitter, and we will answer your questions on the air.
Jared, I know you can't talk about a season and not talk about every single game, but if you take three games out of this season, two of which you were money games, it's really one, as John's saying, Northwestern State. Now, then the question comes in, would the season have unfolded had that loss not happened? I think it was a wake-up call for the team.
I do as well.
But what I was getting at is, you look at the ULL game, they killed them.
Right.
North Texas, they killed them.
Right.
UTEP, they killed them. UTSA and Southern Miss, they had slow starts, but really played well in the second half. Then Western Kentucky killed them.
Yeah, and I really think that, you know, Skip Holtz had mentioned in weeks prior that he had started his offense pretty conservative, trying to see what the defense allowed or was trying to take away, get a read on that defense, make adjustments at halftime to come out in the second half and exploit that defense and score points. Against Western Kentucky, he didn't really do that. Against Western Kentucky, he started taking shots down the field immediately. He opened the offense up right away. And I think part of it was a testament to that defense being just as poor as advertised, because the Western Kentucky defense was not very good.
That's even an understatement.
Right. Right. It really is, because that defense was very poor and porous. I mean, there were so many holes in that defense. It was,
and they had good size. That's what was kind of strange to me.
Well, something that has really continued to make itself more and more evident this season, and I don't understand it. I think more credit needs to be given to Kurt Hester than has been given. Kurt Hester's name does not come up very often. It's always Manny Diaz. It's always Skip Holtzman, of course, and rightfully so, because they are the faces of that program right now. But look, Kurt Hester worked with these guys a lot in the offseason, put a lot of hours into these guys, and this is a different football team than it was a year ago, just as far as their body types go. Athletically, physically, they're a different team. And so far this season, really outside of Oklahoma and Auburn, and there were positions where they looked really good comparably with Auburn in particular. This team is faster, bigger, and stronger than most of these Conference USA foes that they've played.
I would definitely agree with the speed part. The strength part, it's...
Well, the strength part on the defensive line compared to their offensive lines, this has been going on in every game. The defensive line for Louisiana Tech, whether it gets pressure on the quarterback or not, typically is pushing the offensive line 2 and 3 yards back.
Sure. The strength I would agree with, I think one thing that when you're strong and your tone like Tech is, you're in good shape, less injuries happen.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, and this year has proven that as well.
Every team Tech plays, it seems like they drop like flies.
Southern Miss, for instance. And then apparently Western Kentucky, I don't know if you had heard this or not, but when I rewatched the game, the television broadcasters made reference to it, that a recruit that came in as a corner and then switched to running back was back to playing in the secondary for Western Kentucky against Tech.
Well, they were on their second string corners on both sides.
And it showed.
Woo.
But the starters were giving up 41 points a game, so don't give me that either, you know.
And also, I know I'm going to feel like it feels like I'm a broken record player, because it seems like I'm the biggest officials hater that walks the earth. But what's it going to take to get decent officiating inside the Joe?
Another conference change, I would imagine.
Yes, and I'm not even saying that it was just on Tech side. There were calls blown on both sides of the ball. The Carlos Henderson's touchdown run, the kick return for a touchdown, I am 90% sure he'd stepped out of bounds.
Well,
two times at least.
I watched it, you know, I watched it back on TV, and I was trying to see as well. And I've only seen the first half again on TV. My wife comes in and interrupts me, and we change the channel. And so she threatened to delete it today. I told her, no, I haven't seen the second half. Don't delete it yet. And anyway, I rewatched it on the television, and the camera crews were terrible.
They weren't great.
There was not a good angle from anywhere that you could. I mean, yes, was he out of bounds? He stepped out of bounds. Could you tell without there being a shadow of a doubt? No. And so they couldn't overturn it because the ruling on the field was touchdown. So
and then they missed the pass interference.
Oh, clearly pass interference went on Sterling Griffin.
On Sterling Griffin, but even in the first half, on the interception by Cody Sokol, Carlos Henderson was tackled before the ball got there.
Yeah.
And that's the easiest call made on the field.
What about the spots, though? The spots, these spots of the football were some of the worst spots.
See, I on the field, you can't tell.
Right, because you're all on a level plane, and so it's difficult.
Depth perception is terrible from the end zone.
Unbelievably so. That's the reason why I decided to carry myself back up to the press box. Look, when you're watching from the press box, those spots were horrible, and I don't understand it. I do not understand it. And Skip Holtz, I mean, he skips up and down the sideline, up and down the sideline.
When he's mad, you know he's mad,
right? And is chewing these refs out. And there's always a female ref, and I have no problem with that. But Skip is always in the ear.
That one in particular
was
she's awful.
Right.
She's been. This is at least the second time she's been in the
Joe. I believe this was actually the third time. I was looking at the names, and I think this was actually the third time she's been in the Joe. And
it's something that I don't know if it's a Conference USA thing. I don't think it's a normal thing because I've never noticed it. But your side judges, the one on the line and the one deeper in the secondary, they switch sides in the Conference USA. I've never seen that. It's almost like, all right, this group's had enough of a reaming from this coach. We'll get the other side of a turn here in the second half.
I don't get it. I don't know. It's not something that I've paid attention to be able, I guess, to talk about, but it's not something I've ever noticed before. But regardless, the refs and I mean, the refs have been bad in general, and it's not just in the Joe. I mean, on the road too, these Conference USA games, the referees have been really bad, and it's not as if they're not being evaluated. They're being evaluated, and so
Montarius Dora is held 80% of snaps. And I know that DNs are held 80% of snaps all over college football,
right?
But in most conferences, you see it called at least once.
Sure, sure. And then there was a Kenneth Dixon had a big game from right around midfield to inside the 20, broke some tackles in the middle of the field, and then there was a holding call. And
was a hold.
It was clearly a hold.
Kirby Wixon took him down by his his neck.
Kirby Wixon clearly held him, but on that exact same play, there was illegal hands to the face by the defense on three different Louisiana Tech players. Three players, and that wasn't called, but the holding was called. I don't know. It's just like the referees have been really bad.
Here's one text that I just got. It says the press box video board camera feed was not a part of the replay booth. It mysteriously shut off at the start of the game. It showed those two steps on the white. So that angle would have given the replay official enough evidence to overturn it.
It's interesting.
Good thing that mystery happened.
Yeah, certainly so. I suppose. Which the return happened in the beginning of the second quarter, so it had already clearly been, it had already not been working for at least an entire quarter, so it's not as if it just all of a sudden happened.
Sure.
But still, interesting.
We talk about Manny Diaz, and still enough can't be said about his game plans and what he does to offenses to keep them off balance, to make the quarterback rush throws, throw into coverage, et cetera, et cetera. He talked about how on the stat sheet, only the guy that makes the interception is the one that's the hero. But when you – it's kind of a domino effect. If on the first pick by Darius Barnes, if Mitch Villamez doesn't come unblocked and he's in the guy's face – it doesn't get picked. If on that same play, if Houston Bates hasn't peeled off onto the screen, it doesn't get picked. So there's a more. I like the term that he used. He said it's a multiple choice question.
Right. He said it was a multiple choice question, and ultimately the offense decides who the star of the defense gets to be. And he had mentioned that Doughty could have taken the sack, could have thrown it to Adarius Barnes and got it picked, could have thrown it to Houston Bates, who could have gotten a pick six, or thrown it to the only other option, which Kentrell Bryce had jumped the route, and so that very well could have been another interception. And
or throw it out of bounds.
Or he could have thrown it, right, yeah. And then, of course, option E was that he threw it out of bounds. And
he chose A.
Right, he chose A, threw it to Adarius Barnes.
Or I say AB.
And that's something that we knew Manny Diaz was going to try to do with this defense coming in, was force turnovers, get tackles for loss, get sacks. And in conference games alone, that doesn't count Oklahoma, it doesn't count Northwestern State, doesn't count ULL, and it doesn't count Auburn. Louisiana Tech was giving up 26.6 last year. They're giving up 14 this year. Points per game in conference play is 14. They're leading the league in total defense. They're leading the league in yards per play allowed. They're leading the league in pass efficiency defense and second in rushing defense. And you take those 42 yards off of Leon Allen's opening run of the game, which was clearly just a missed assignment on the gap on that side, then Louisiana Tech is number one in rushing defense in conference. Those 42 yards made all the difference between the first and second ranking. I mean, it's crazy.
Not to discount what Tech did Saturday, but we said this last Tuesday. Western Kentucky had played no one up until Saturday.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, no, you're exactly right. And we mentioned that last week. When we talked about the Western Kentucky game, their schedule has been nothing but cupcakes. So it wasn't as if they were putting on.
And dare I say, Marshall has played no one.
Oh, no, you're exactly right. There's no question about that either. And when you start to compare the two, there are some similarities in Western Kentucky's offense and Marshall's offense, and we'll get into that later on if the two
should meet.
Should meet.
Tech has to win two of the last three.
Correct.
To make it to the conference championship game.
Right. And
those three games, UAB, of course, Saturday. In 2 weeks, Old Dominion out in Norfolk, Virginia.
In 2 weeks from the UAB game, because there's
yes,
yeah, right.
2 weeks from Saturday,
right,
and then the week after, the Saturday after Thanksgiving, inside the Joe at 11 a.m. Rice.
Louisiana Tech is on a four-game winning streak. In that four-game winning streak, they've scored 172 and have allowed 53.
Woo! And then you look at the third quarter.
Oh, the third. Louisiana Tech is still leading the country in third quarter scoring margin. They've now outscored their opponents by more than 100 points in the third quarter.
And that is what UAB does as well. Is third quarter they make adjustments at halftime and beat teams really in the third quarter. It'll be interesting to see what gives.
And we'll get into that UAB game more. I don't think the UAB game will be close.
I don't either.
And it's because it's another one of these.
Vegas does, Massey does, but they've been wrong a lot.
Well, we'll see. But UAB is another very one-dimensional team, and very one-dimensional on offense, and not a great defense.
Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we will talk to Nick Birdsong from AL.com, UAB's beat writer. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jonathan Ford, publisher at BleedTechBlue.com. Jared, a couple of sponsors. Then we'll get to Nick Birdsong on the Keller Williams Parish-wide Partners Hotline.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish-wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse, formerly known as Dowling Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish-wide Partners Hotline, 888-993-7762, 888-993-7762.
Nick, how's it going, my friend?
Man, I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing wonderful. Talk about this game from a UAB perspective and what matchups you see being the biggest to watch.
I mean, well, obviously, from a UAB perspective, I mean, this is probably the biggest game in a decade, the biggest UAB football game in a decade. One game away from bowl eligibility. They haven't played in a bowl game since 2004. So I mean, they're just beaming. Coming home off of a three-game road trip, guys are excited to have an opportunity to play for bowl eligibility in front of their home fans. They got a buzz around the campus, somewhat of a buzz, around the city. And I think the key matchup for UAB is really going to be trying to figure out that LaTeX offense.
When you look at Jordan Cameron, of course, he's the Howard. Jordan Howard. I don't know why I always want to make him Jordan Cameron.
Kobe Cameron's brother plays for the
Colby
Browns.
Kobe Cameron's brother, former Louisiana Tech. He also plays for the Browns.
He plays for the Browns, yes.
Sorry. Jordan Howard. He is obviously the centerpiece of that UAB offense. Do you think Louisiana Tech even has a chance at slowing him down?
Man, I definitely think. I mean, they're not undefeated in the conference, for no reason. But Jordan Howard is an exceptional player. He's a homebred kid from Gardendale, north suburb of Birmingham, 6'1", 228. And the thing that he's really showcased this year, last year he split time with Darren Reeves, who's with the Panthers now. This year he's really showcased his durability, being able to be a guy that can get 30 plus carries, 160, 180 yards, score a couple touchdowns. And he's a guy that, it sounds cliche, but he does really get stronger, as the game goes on. And he hasn't been a guy that's put the ball on the ground a lot either. So, there's a chance. I think he's just the one constant in their offense. Sometimes the passing game is there. Sometimes, the passing game isn't. But Jordan Howard is always there.
You know, you say that there's some buzz generated around campus right now. One criticism I've always heard of UAB football is that there's little to no atmosphere inside of Legion Field. Will this buzz around campus and town help that?
I definitely think it does. I mean, you know, you guys have been around sports for a while, and what invigorates any fan base is winning. You know, you're not going to get a lot of, you know, butts in the seats when you're going 2-10 and you're ending the season on a, you know, on a six-game losing streak like they did last year. But I think that the opportunity at bowl eligibility, you know, facing two teams that are undefeated in the conference right now in La Tech and Marshall, and back-to-back games at home Saturday, you know, early Saturday morning games, no reason why folks can't get up and come out of Legion Field. So I think it's going to be a slow process. I mean, obviously, man, any school that's not Auburn or any school that's not Alabama is always going to have a problem just because people grow up, you know, Auburn and Alabama fans, even if they go to Jackson State, even if they go to UAB. But I think winning will spark anybody, you know, will spark a fan base that's interested, and they're doing that right now.
What's the attendance been like thus far in Birmingham?
I think right now I've heard the statistic. You know, you guys can go and check and see if this is true. I think they're third in the conference. So I do think they're doing well. I think they had 27,000 just to start the season for Bill Clark's first game. So, I mean, obviously they're not packing Legion Field out with seats, you know, upwards of 70,000. They're not doing that right now, but I think, you know, there's a whole heck of a lot more people at games than there were last year. Last year, I helped out covering the Rice game. It was a Thursday night game. It was freezing cold outside, but, I mean, man, you could have had a cell phone conversation easily in that place.
Yeah, I'm looking right here. The North Texas game, there was 20,365, which is not bad attendance. It's unfortunate for the Blazers that the building seats 72, and it makes the crowd look worse than it maybe it actually is.
Yeah, and that's definitely why, you know, you talk to any true blue, you know, UAB fan, they really want an on-campus facility. That's something that they've been trying to lobby for. Last week they started the UAB Football Foundation, a school didn't start as kind of a third-party, you know, fundraising arm from some, you know, big-time donor or whatever. And the first thing they want to do is kind of get an on-campus practice facility, a modernized one. I think that's going to help being recruits. And I think maybe long-term they do look at trying to get that on-campus facility that's not, you know, 70,000, but that, you know, can really give them a nice home field advantage like every other school in the conference.
A common opponent for Louisiana Tech and UAB would, of course, be Western Kentucky, a game played in Bowling Green, Kentucky. UAB came back in the second half, won 42-39. What was Western Kentucky able to do in the first half to stop UAB and also score points?
Well, one thing that they did well in that game, I mean, you know, obviously going in, Western Kentucky is being known as a team that passes the ball around a ton. I think at the time they were one of the only teams in the country that had four guys with at least 19 catches, or four guys with 20 catches, and they had another one with 19, another one with 14. But they actually did something that a lot of teams have done against UAB when they haven't been playing well, is that they broke them for big plays. And I think that's one thing that UAB is always talking about. They want to clear up. They want to do better at is to limiting teams from getting you know, huge chunk yardage plays on them, and they did that. I think offensively in that game, UAB sputtered a little bit early, and in a passing game kind of picked up late. And I think Jordan Howard again, I think he had 180-plus yards that game. They went to him maybe 34 times, which at that time was a career high for him. But, you know, they fed their horse, and that opens up things in the passing game.
Defensively for UAB, where do they struggle, or where do they thrive the most?
I think where they struggle at, we'll start with that. And it's really just due to some early season injuries that they had. Is in the secondary. They've been kind of playing it by ear based on matchups, who's going to start, you know, at various spots in the defensive secondary, and kind of rotating guys in and out. Jordan Petty was a cornerback. They moved him to safety. Roland Milligan, JUCO transfer, was a cornerback by trade. They moved him to safety, and even sometimes lining him up at linebacker, even though he's like a 5'10", 185 guy, super aggressive. He had 13 tackles against Arkansas. I think what, you know, their real strength is a defensive line. I think Daheem Watkins is a guy, maybe that, you know, one of the better defensive linemen in the country. He's 6'4". I think he's a 260 kid. Linebacker Jay Gaines is a really strong guy, a really strong player for him in that position, a junior, a local guy from around here. So I think the defensive front is probably one of their strengths right now. And the secondary is always a work in progress for them this year just because of the injuries and the different substitutions that they've had to make there.
So when you look at Louisiana Tech the last couple of weeks, they've set up the run with the pass and found some success through the air. That's got to be a concern from you for UAB on Saturday.
Yeah, it really is. It's always a concern. They've actually given up big plays in a running game as well. You know, the old adage says, you know, you can make some mistakes on offense, but you make a mistake on defense and it's 6 points. But they're definitely concerned, obviously, with La Tech's running game. We're trying to be able to contain, you know, one of the better backs in the conference and in the country. And hopefully they want to start there by trying to contain the running game. And hopefully, you know, they'll be in some more predictable passing situations. But the more you end up with second and two, second and three, you know, the more you're on your heels as a defense.
Before I let you get out of here, give me a score prediction. I have people do this every week.
Oh, man, well, it's a Conference USA game, man. So UAB is going to be at home. I like La Tech. You know, I'll probably go ahead and say, man, 35-31 La Tech. There you go, man. I don't know. I'm terrible with those things.
But you know what? You're not far off. We keep up with MasseyRatings.com. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's an old computer ranking that used to be part of the old BCS model.
Right.
But they have the game 34-28 Tech.
Okay.
So
okay.
You're not far off from those guys. For what it's worth.
Cool, man. Well, I'm glad at least I sound like I made some sense of that. I definitely see it being a high scoring game. I think there's just too much talent on both teams' offense for it to be a 13-10 game.
Well, given the fact that you think Louisiana Tech is victorious this weekend and UAB is looking for one more victory to get to bowl eligibility, does that mean it probably comes in the last week of the season against Southern Miss?
It's very likely. I mean, obviously, man, the Marshall game, they kind of seem to be head and shoulders above the rest of the conference right now. Going to Southern Miss, that's a road game. It's going to be tough to go to Hattiesburg knowing that you need one win. So I think they want to try to collect on this one and then maybe see if they can do some other things with those last two. But, I guess if you're just looking at it on the surface, maybe the Southern Miss game is the most winnable game. But we're talking about a team that people that went 2-10 last year coming in not having a whole lot of different personnel. And, they have a winning record in November. That's something that hasn't happened around Birmingham for a while. And so they're looking at it like, hey, why not us? Why not now?
And then when you look at the Marshall game, it's obviously they've got a bye week after Louisiana Tech. Is there any chance that some of those injuries could be healed by then?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I actually just came back from UAB's practice, and that's one thing that Bill Clark was saying is that, hey, we have no reason not to put it all out on the line right now. We've got a bye week coming up, before we have to face Marshall. I know Cameron Blankenship, the offensive lineman, Jamari Staples, one of their better deep threats who's just struggled with some injuries in his sophomore season. You know, so they've got some guys that they need to get healthy, but around this year, like they say, everybody's banged up, but that bye week before they have to go play a physical team like Marshall is definitely going to be beneficial for the Blazers.
Nick, thanks for joining us. Tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me at @birds_word. That's BIRDS_WORD. No, I didn't make that up myself, but hey, why not keep it?
Well, we appreciate you, man, joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
Yeah, no problem at all, man.
Nick Birdsong joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio, the beat writer for UAB at AL.com, one of the major newspapers in Alabama. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jonathan Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio, right where you are right now. Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, a couple of sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse, formerly known as Dowling Smokehouse. Give us a call on Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners Hotline, 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can tweet us with the hashtag BTB Radio, and we will answer your questions on the air.
You know, I don't know exactly what to expect Saturday. I think the atmosphere inside of Legion Field could be a bad one. Tech needs to come in expecting there not to be one, because there usually is not one.
Well, I'll tell you what. UAB is averaging around 23,000 fans in the seats for home games this year. Last year, they were only averaging 10,548. So they more than doubled their attendance this year, because winning, you know.
But to use a term that my dad always used to say, being a PA announcer for Tulane, whenever there was 300 people in the Superdome, it's like BBs in a boxcar.
Yeah. I mean, when your stadium holds 72,000 people and you've got 20,000 in there, yeah, certainly so. I mean, I totally understand that. And it's not as if UAB isn't known for being pretty dead on game day anyway. So
Tech's going to have to go in and know that they're going to have to create their own atmosphere. Whether that's whenever you've got somebody on the sidelines like Kurt Hester, it's not hard to get up. When you've got a defensive coordinator like Manny Diaz who can motivate just about anybody, it's not hard to get up. I worry about a slow start on offense.
Yeah, I do think that maybe Skip Holtz will, and of course it all goes back to what Manny Diaz sees when he looks over the tape as, you know, for that defense, but Skip very well may start off fast again this week, building on some of that momentum that they have coming out of the Western Kentucky game. And then this UAB team is another team that's given up a lot of points. They're giving up 31 a game. They gave up a bunch to Western Kentucky. They've given up a lot of points this season. They're giving up 31. They're only scoring 34. So, I mean, it's not as if that defense is stalwart or anything like that. I think he could come out pretty quickly again. They gave up 34 to FIU. They gave up 21 to North Texas. Is about their best looking
and North Texas
defensive
performance has just about mailed it in.
Oh, North Texas is done. They are done. North Texas is finished.
Just like UTSA. They had promising seasons, and they just fell on their sword.
Yeah, and really, UTSA had so much more to lose than North Texas did anyway, because UTSA, if they weren't good this year, they weren't going to be good for the next three or four. And they weren't, or they're not. And now, boy, the next 3 years are going to be pretty doom and gloom if you're a UTSA fan.
When you look at points for and points against for UAB and Louisiana Tech, UAB overall, 311 points for, 272 against. Tech is 322 and 217. So Tech's outscoring their opponents by a considerably more than UAB, which is not a surprise because of how good that defense has been lately. Jordan Howard is where their offense begins and ends. He sets it all up. He gets lots of second effort yardage. They're going to have to tackle him by committee.
Yeah, he's a 6'1", 230-pound running back. He's already got over 1,000 yards on the season. He's got 9 touchdowns. He's averaging 112 yards a game. Had a really good game against North Texas. Went for 184 on 34 carries. Against Western Kentucky, he had another big game, and those are the two. The Western Kentucky is where he had 183 yards on 34 carries. Had over 100 again against North Texas, and those are, you know, both Tech and UAB's comparable matchups. And Louisiana Tech was victorious in both of those, and UAB as well.
When you look at what Tech's been able to do lately, is get some interceptions, and they're so good at pass efficiency defense. And Cody Clements, the UAB quarterback, has already thrown 7 interceptions.
Well, not only that, but he's also injured. Bill Clark mentioned that in his press conference this week. They've got a couple of offensive linemen that are hurt, and also Clements is dealing with a couple of different injuries. He did play last week, but is not 100%. So,
and did not play against Arkansas.
Right, he did not play against Arkansas. Jeremiah Briscoe played against Arkansas. And Clements apparently is an ankle injury. So
he'll be a sitting duck, in other words?
Exactly. And that only bodes well for Manny Diaz's defense.
The more I hear about these injuries, it makes me wonder why Vegas has set the line where they have. Some books have it down to as low as 3.5. It opened at 2.5. It got to as high as 4.5, and I thought that it was just going to go higher than that. But it's gone back down again. The over-under sitting at 58.5. I don't get it.
I don't either. Not with the injuries, not with the way that Louisiana Tech has been able to show that they can stop the run. I understand that Jordan Howard is athletic, certainly a threat, but I don't get it as well. I mean, it's not as if UAB has beaten anyone. I'm not sure. I do know that on the game-winning drive against FAU last week, UAB defeated FAU 31-28, and on that game-winning field goal drive,
they ran the ball 12 times.
And they only had 12 plays. They didn't throw the ball once. They were doing two things. First, they were trying to take time off the clock. It took 4 minutes off of the clock. But also, they just gave the ball to Jordan Howard over and over and over. And they lined up against him and they said, stop us if you can. And you couldn't.
He's where it starts and ends.
No doubt about it. And I think the Louisiana Tech can stop Jordan Howard. And as confident as I've been every week in Jordan Howard, and I've tried to bring as much attention to him as possible because he's a stud. He really is. He's the second best running back in Conference USA. And he can be stopped. And I think Manny Diaz is going to be able to do that. And Leon Allen had similar statistics. He had similar statistics to Kenneth Dixon. He had similar statistics to Jordan Howard. Leon Allen has similar size to Jordan Howard. And Louisiana Tech, outside of that 42-yard run, completely shut down Leon Allen and Anthony Wales.
Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll talk a little basketball. It's Wednesday. Inside the Thomas Assembly Center is Tech Madness. Slam dunk contest. We'll see if Raheem Appleby shows back up in shorty short shorts and a throwback jersey. Something tells me he won't. But it'll be a lot of fun to be there. See the Dunkin' Dogs. See the Lady Texters. Lady Texters have already played their first game, an exhibition game against Mississippi College. Big time victorious. I think you could see where Tyler Summitt's going to hang his hat is defense.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
So we'll talk a little basketball on the other side of the break, as well as get to a caller on the Keller Williams Parish White Partners Hotline, 888-993-7762. We'll be back right after this.
Ever put your watch on at 7 in the morning only to notice it reads 2:35? Or that sinking feeling when you click your vehicle remote and the doors don't open? You need to see Paul at National Jewelry. Watch batteries, vehicle remote batteries, installed quickly. Paul can also fix that link in your watch band and all other jewelry repair, and they do it in-house. Guys, please don't forget your anniversary this month. National Jewelry has their special surprise. National Jewelry, your diamond and engagement and battery store. Reynolds Drive, Ruston.
Hi, Tech fans. This is Dr. Gary Stokely. I wanted to announce that I've re-engaged my real estate license from the 1980. This will be a second career for me, not a part-time effort. I pledge the same commitment to you that I did to the students in Louisiana Tech University. I chose Keller Williams because of a team approach and the company's philosophy toward life that I share: God, family, and work. Keller Williams is the largest real estate firm in the United States and Canada. Whether it is you, your family, or friends, when deciding to buy, sell, rent, or invest in land, commercial property, or a home, I would appreciate the opportunity to make your dreams come true. Go Dogs!
Keller Williams Parish White Partners, 1390 Hudson Lane, Monroe. Each office independently owned and operated. Call 812-7659.
I'm Nick Brown.
And I'm Sean Fox. And every Saturday from 9 to 11, live from the Depot in Ruston, it's the Nick Brown Show.
We talk Conference USA, SEC, and Sun Belt football. Plus, we take your phone calls.
Nick, don't forget, at 10:30, we're talking Who Dat. We're breaking down the New Orleans Saints.
That's right. We even talk the Saints on the Nick Brown Show. Join us every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 at the Depot. It's the Nick Brown Show right here on ESPN 97.7 FM.
From the Diamond Vault Studios, this is Sports Talk 24-7 on KNBB, Dubok, Ruston, Monroe, ESPN Radio 97.7.
Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. Jared, a couple of sponsors, then we'll get to, surprise, surprise, Rafe.
Bleak to Blue Radio Season 7, brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse, formerly known as Dowling Smokehouse. Join us just as Rafe, friend of the show, Rafe, does every week on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline, 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Rafe, what's going on, my man?
Oh, man, having a great day so far with school out. And did y'all have school out over there in Ruston?
I don't know. I'm not in school.
Yeah, I'm not either, and I don't have any children. Actually, none of us in the room have kids, so I think maybe.
Well, we got to sleep in today, and that's always a big deal, especially in our household. So,
congratulations.
Yeah, man, it was good. I feel rested. I was thinking about this game, and I looked up and crunched some numbers before I called in, and there's only been one team that we've beaten that had a winning record when we played them, and that was Lafayette. And, you know, they had beaten Southern. They just want to know. But, you know, it's a little different animal when you're playing a team that feels good about themselves and has a winning record and, you know, a team going for bowl eligibility. And, you know, UAB is kind of in a different position than any team that we played and been successful against.
That's true. That's true. As Nick Birdsong mentioned, I mean, this is the first time this team will be able to be bowl eligible be able to play in a bowl game possibly since 2004. So not only are they playing for bowl eligibility, it's the first time they've been able to do it in a decade.
You know, and one thing that we've done, I've kind of noticed throughout the season, is that we've kind of wrecked some team seasons or been the first, you know, the first pin to fall for their season. You know, I know UTEP has rebounded and ULL rebounded, but, you know, some of the other teams really have not been able to overcome what we've done to them. And so you mentioned the injuries earlier and how other teams seem to get hurt and broken when they play us, and I don't know if it's because of physicality or fitness or whatever, but there's no doubting that we don't just beat them by pure out-scheming them. There's a lot of physicality in our attack, and I think that going against a power running back like they have, that's going to be our bread and butter. Is that, you know, he's going to have to run through a couple of guys to get to open field, and he's going to feel it whenever he hits that line. And I saw Western's running backs kind of getting up gimpy a few times. Yeah, I think we knocked ULL's guy out in the first quarter, and just opposing teams, their quarterbacks, their running backs, their skill guys, it's not fun to get hit by this defense.
So what I'm hearing from you is that you don't understand the line from Vegas either.
Well, you know, I haven't. They haven't been close to right on us. I mean, maybe one or two times all year. I mean, they've been completely off. You know, I think they picked us larger margin against UTSA, and I'm not sure about that. But then the smaller margins, we blow teams out. We're kind of a difficult team to pick. You know, it's hard to know how many points we're going to score and how many we're going to give up. But I like what we have going right now, and any kind of win's a win, and I'd take it, especially going into a bye week. But it's still, I mean, just like last week, there's a little bit of that apprehension about is our offense going to be able to be effective? They have a constant and consistent good ground game. You know, can we, you know, keep from giving up a big play and kind of hold them in check? How is our special teams going to fare? You know, what about our receivers? You know, can we overcome Hunter again? And I know that Trent Taylor's going to have a bullseye on him, so who else can step up and make plays, especially if Griffin's going to be out? But those are all questions that we think we have answers to, but there's really not enough data to show that we can do it, especially against a team with a winning record playing to go to a bowl game. So I am nervous about it, but you know, I was nervous last week.
This UAB team does have a winning record, but let's not overblow it too much. I mean, they are only 5-4. So they have a winning record, but again, it's only 5-4. Now, of course, two of those losses did come in Arkansas and Mississippi State. But, Rafe, you mentioned UAB's running back, Jordan Howard's going to be hit hard every time. He had 90 against Mississippi State, and he had 89 against Arkansas, and then 67 against North Texas. Those are his three lowest games.
He's one of those guys that's going to get his, as the kids would say.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And well, their quarterback was out against Arkansas. That's not really fair. I mean, what would you think if we didn't have Sokol? You know, that would limit us, and that's kind of an excuse from, because the other guy, I think Briscoe's the backup. I mean, he only threw it like 10 times.
Right.
And that took away a major element in their game. So, and I wouldn't count that one. And Mississippi State, you know, they're kind of good.
No. That's what I'm saying, though. I'm giving him credit that he was able to get 89 and 90 even against some pretty stout run defenses in Mississippi State and Arkansas.
I thought you were saying, well, they held him in check. Maybe
No. I'm saying that even against those teams, he had pretty impressive games.
Yeah, I think he's going to have some difficulty if he's their only, if they're a one trick pony, then that pony doesn't stand a chance, really, because he may have a couple of gainers here and there, but he's going to get they say he gets stronger as the game goes on. No, he doesn't. Not against us. It depends on how hard he gets hit. And I haven't seen, apart from the major, top 10 ranked schools, I haven't seen any of the running backs be really successful. And even in those games, I mean, nobody gashed us. You know, that we held Auburn in check. That quarterback was phenomenal. But, you know, the running backs didn't do anything against us. And OU didn't really do that much with the running game either. So, I don't think he's going to be able to steamroll us. But, the question is, can we put points on the board? You know, can we avoid untimely turnovers? How is our special teams going to play? It's early, another 11 o'clock kickoff. You know, can we kind of shake the web cobwebs out early? So, I'll go ahead and throw my prediction out there.
All right, let's hear it.
I'm going to go with 35-17 Louisiana Tech.
Let me put this past you. The teams that they have beaten, North Texas, 2-6, Troy, 1-8, FAU, 3-6, WKU, 3-5. Just like last week, they have. And if we're going, then we can go to Florida A&M. All right, Alabama A&M.
Right, Alabama A&M.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to pull up that win loss total because it doesn't matter. They have played no one. They have beat no one.
That's true. I mean, they did, and that loss at home to Florida International is compelling too as well. You know, they got handled at home and held in check. So.
And Florida International is 3-6.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel good about it. You know, if we win out, and Marshall loses, heck, we may be hosting a conference championship game in Ruston.
How nuts would that be?
That would be just crazy. I mean, considering what we were talking about even after week one of the season.
Rafe, what do you make about the – I don't know if you caught the first segment with the redemption story for Holtz and Manny Diaz alike. What do you think of that?
Well, Manny Diaz, as I've heard him interviewed, is he's just so sharp, and not just with defensive scheme, but, you know, as far as his ideas of what motivates people and what connects people and things like that. So I've really enjoyed listening to him. And Skip Holtz, too, what can you say? You know, the guy, took some criticism, went out and got the right pieces, brought them in, has his mechanism going right now. And he's always been a likable guy, and I don't think anybody could say they don't like Skip Holtz. But, you know, winning sure makes him even more enjoyable.
Dare I say he's Conference USA Coach of the Year?
I would say, what were we picked to finish in the West Division?
Middle of the pack.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. He's definitely earned it, and I hope I hope that we can hold on to him for a while, because I know he's not as ambitious. He's already been around a little bit, but anyway, his stability and the way that it's kind of his CEO and PR is all, it fits Ruston well. He's he can establish himself there, and it would be great to see him build a a Mike White type program with our football team.
Rafe, appreciate the call like always. Thanks, my friend.
All right, man. Thank you.
Good stuff as always. I had to pull up those records. for those teams that UAB has beaten.
Sure, sure. Well, and like you said, just like Western Kentucky have played nobody, UAB has beaten no one. They've played a couple of good teams, Mississippi State, Arkansas, of course, but they haven't beaten anyone.
The game that stands out is that 47-34 loss to Mississippi State in week two. I mean, I'm sure it was a case that Mississippi State was overlooking them. I'm pulling up the schedule to see who Mississippi State had in week three. They actually had South Alabama week three and beat them 35-3. I think it was a little bit of a wake-up call for them. Then in week four, beat LSU 34-29. So dare I say that UAB was Mississippi State's Northwestern State?
Very well could have been, except Mississippi State won.
Without a doubt. But still looks like it was a wake-up call.
Right. Sure, sure.
Let's take an early break, and then we'll talk about basketball and wrap up the show with some predictions on the other side of the break. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. A little breaking news. Louisiana Tech picked up commitment number 20 during the show. Out here in the field. It's Jordan Bradford, defensive lineman from St. Stanislaus in South Mississippi. Good pickup for the Bulldogs. We'll have more on that on BleedTechBlue.com. Stay tuned.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse, formerly known as Dowling's. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline, 888-993-7762, 888-993-7762. And you can still get in on Twitter for this last segment of the show. Use the hashtag BTB Radio, and we'll answer your questions on the air.
Louisiana Tech Madness tomorrow night inside the TAC at 7 p.m. I hear they're going to turn the lights off, do a little intro, get some excitement brewing.
See, that would be nice. I wish that was something that they incorporated more often, honestly. I really like the lights being down.
The lights take a little while to warm up.
Yeah, I mean, I understand
logistic
that.
Reasons.
But what if you did it like the Lakers do it? If you do it like Jim Buss decided to do so many years ago, and make it more like a show where the court is like a stage and all the seats around the court are dark, like as if you were in a theater or watching a Broadway play. I mean, that's perfect. It's great. Great atmosphere. Then it doesn't matter if the lights take a while to warm up because you'll never turn them on anyway.
There you go.
It's just a thought.
I'm excited about Louisiana Tech men's basketball, as is most of Tech Nation, I know. But it really could be a very special, special season. It's all contingent on how the newcomers come along. You got four starters that are known. Raheem Appleby, Speedy Smith, Alex Hamilton, and Michael Kaiser. Your fifth guy will likely be Eric McCree. He'll probably play the four. Then when you look coming off the bench, will be guys like Janiah White, 7-foot Janiah White.
Certainly Xavion Stapleton.
Xavion Stapleton. Kedar Davis, probably the best defender on the team, and that's hard to think about whenever you got somebody like Speedy on the roster. There's lots of talent here. And in college basketball, you want to be hot in March. And this team could be really hot in March because of all the youth on the roster.
Oh, there's no question about it. And as at that point, some of these newcomers will have had a time to quote unquote gel and find their roles and where they fit in Mike White's offense, where they fit in his defense. And defense is really what Mike has made such an emphasis on. I mean, throughout his tenure at Louisiana Tech, it's been the defense and the pressure defense, the full court pressure and all that stuff. And that's something that is going to take longer for those guys to get in on maybe than the offensive side of the ball, because let's face it, these guys being the best, maybe the best athlete on their basketball team, wherever they came from, I'm certain they're more offensive minded. So having an opportunity to get these guys really gelled on the defensive side of the ball is what's going to take time. But there's no doubt Mike White can do that.
My dark horse candidate in the duck contest, I'll give you two dark horse candidates in the dunk contest tomorrow night. Xavier Stapleton. And probably the biggest dark horse would be Merrill Holden.
I was thinking about Merrill Holden. I was assuming that you would
say
Merrill
Holden. That guy's a freak.
Did you see there was a video of a put? Yeah.
Yes.
The video of the put. Was it a putback dunk?
It was a putback dunk by Knowles. I think it was an alley oop dunk.
I think it was an inbounds play. It was an inbounds play from the baseline, and Holden went up and
He threw it down with authority, one-handed.
It was like he threw it through the goal, like that Blake Griffin dunk that really wasn't a dunk. He just like was so high up that he just threw it down through the goal. I mean, impressive.
Holden is somebody he's a rarity in college basketball. He is a 3-for-3 guy. So he doesn't have a redshirt year available, but he'll be on campus for 3 years. Normally, your junior college players may have a redshirt year, but they can only play two. So they're 2-for-3. Or 3-for-2, I should say.
3 years to play two.
Correct.
Whereas Holden has 3 years to play three. So he'll be around campus for a while, is what you're telling me.
His ceiling is unbelievable. So he's a guy to really watch for at Louisiana Tech. He's a 6'8", 6'9", probably a true four. But can dribble the ball, can play some. He's probably what they would call in the league a flex four. He's got the length to play out and knock down a mid-range jumper, but has the athleticism and the strength to play down low.
You know what I'm most, not necessarily excited about, but the biggest question mark for Tech Madness is for me?
What's that?
Who will they replace J-Mac with? Because J-Mac was undoubtedly the best.
He was epic last year.
He was the best MC of that thing, hands down, by far. I mean, no question, J-Mac was a great MC for that. I mean, it was unbelievable how good he was last year.
He was very good. I don't know who they're going to get to replace him.
Whoever it is, they
got
pale.
Big shoes to fill.
Right, absolutely. I hope that they don't pale in comparison to J-Mac, but at the same time, how could you not?
I just said feel like I've been in North Louisiana too long. Been hanging around John Tabor entirely too much. Speaking of John Tabor, you're going to start us off with these predictions, my friend. How do you see this UAB-Louisiana Tech matchup finishing out?
I think we'll trend more to what we saw against UTSA. Maybe a slow start. Who can establish the running game? Second half, I think it'll get cranked up in Tech's favor. I'm liking 41-17.
He's right there with Rafe, who was 34-17.
Yeah, yeah. Really, I don't think Louisiana Tech will struggle much after the first two or three drives to stop Jordan Howard. I think that UAB could come out on the very first drive and have a couple of big runs, maybe similar to what Western Kentucky was able to do had Darius Barnes not got that interception. I mean, that Western Kentucky game could very well be a different story. But I think that UAB will not have success from the second quarter on at rushing the football as far as the big play is concerned, and they will have to turn to Clements to try to make a comeback. And Clements not only is not a very good quarterback at all, but is also injured. And
he's got a bad wheel.
Yeah. So I'm going to take Tech. I'm going to say Tech scores 45. I'm going to say that UAB scores 13. I don't think this is going to be a close game. And
so you say Tech
that.
Covers going just going away.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about it. And maybe I'll come back in here next week and I'm wrong and it's a lot closer, but I really just don't I really don't think so.
I'm with you. I don't think it's close. As many points as Tech has been scoring lately and that defense setting up some short fields, that's how you score in the 50s. You don't score in the 50s without some defensive help or lots of big plays. And Tech's doing it with short fields. Mm-hmm. I'll go 52-21.
Wow. 52. You know, when Louisiana Tech was able to get...
In order to get to 52, obviously, they got to avoid the slow start. And that's going to be tough with no atmosphere.
Sure. Something that is interesting that you say 52. Against Western Kentucky, really, they had a chance to score 73. They left two touchdowns on the board. They absolutely left two.
They did kind of start slow Saturday.
Well, they did, but they left two touchdowns because they you know, they didn't come up. They got off, I know they got the 51-yard field goal, but that very well could have been a touchdown instead. You leave 4 points on the board there. So you're looking at maybe 69.
The blown pass interference on Carlos that stalled that drive out, and they
absolutely
went for it on fourth,
and
didn't
then
get it.
Trent Taylor, I know that looked as though Trent Taylor just did not make that catch. It was a deep ball, corner of the end zone right there at the 1 yard line. He would have had that catch, but his feet, and I've watched this over and over, his feet got tangled up. There were two guys there and neither one of them were in position to make a play, and his feet got tangled up with the corner and he slipped when he was trying to cut back to that ball. Had he not fallen down, that is at least putting you at the 1 yard line, if not a touchdown right there. But Louisiana Tech was not able to capitalize on the short field that the defense gave them as much as they could have. This offense was putting together methodical 70-yard drives, moving the ball down the field through the air and on the ground, and looked – I mean, they were absolutely clicking on all cylinders and looked like a legitimate high-scoring offense. They looked like a well-oiled machine. And that's the kind of defense that I think – I mean, the offense that I think you're going to see against UAB, the same kind of offense that you've been seeing in the previous three games on this four-game winning streak.
I don't disagree at all with that, and I wish that the NCAA website is working. I was going to look at the total defense numbers for UAB. It is a better defense than Western Kentucky, but
sure, but
most do
right.
Total defense for UAB 66th, team passing efficiency defense 83rd. So that's not great. Their rush offense 37th in the country with 204 yards per game. You stop the running game and it's going to be a long day. They're 63rd in the passing game, 32nd in team passing efficiency. I think Tech forces several interceptions, and I'll go with 3.
And they've already got 16 on the season. I mean, they're second in the country in turnovers forced, and they're third in interception. I mean, they're the third in turnovers forced and second in interceptions.
And UAB is tied for 90th in turnover margin.
There you go. I really think that if Louisiana Tech is able to go ahead and stop that run early, and they force Clements to throw the football, he's going to be sacked. I think probably several times, at least maybe QBH, you know, get a little quarterback hit or quarterback hurry.
The UAB has one receiver, essentially, J.J. Nelson.
Right, and typically he's the leading receiver. I went back and looked at their schedule. He's their leading receiver not every game. I think there was one game or maybe two, but he was not their leading receiver. But other than that, he is their leading receiver week after week. And it's easy for a defense like this one, with having the talented secondary that they do, to take one guy out of the game. You know, Western Kentucky's receivers weren't as bad as Louisiana Tech's secondary made them look this past week.
And Nelson's not a big guy, and that's really where Tech struggles, is with bigger receivers that they can body him and go up for a jump ball. I think Jamarcus Nelson or J.J. Nelson is 5'10 or 5'11, so that's not a concern there. I think he may be a 5'11 and 170 if memory serves me correctly. So I don't worry about that. I think Tech wins this one going away and covers going away, but again, don't condone betting. but they cover.
Well, and they've been good against the points, you know, every week. So hard to see them stopping here, not covering that game or whatever it is. And I think the line will move some more as this week progresses.
Yeah, it is only Tuesday.
Right, exactly. It's only Tuesday, so I think this line will continue to shift a little in Louisiana Tech's favor.
Well, let's make this the it. The end, I should say. Not the it. Whatever the it is. Thanks for joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. We'll be back the same time next week right here. Make sure you check out BleedTechBlue.com. Breaking news, like we said during the show, Louisiana Tech picked up a commitment from Jordan Bradford out of St. Stanislaus High School in South Mississippi, I think Bay St. Louis to be exact. Had a Southern Miss offer for sure. A good get for the Bulldogs. Come check out that breaking news on BleedTechBlue.com. We'll be back next time right here on ESPN Radio 97.7.
You've been listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio with Jonathan Ford. Listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on